As I sit recording, here in Ireland, it's a very warm and sunny day. It feels like a welcome relief after a week of rain. And I'm with you, it's lovely. So the last thing you'd imagine I'd think about now is snow and ice, unless it's in a glass and I can drink it. But a few weeks back, we met with a new panel of activists for our Ecolution YouTube series. And not to interrupt the summer vibes now, but we did ask them a question I've avoided.
Do you think we're talking enough about the Arctic and Antarctic in our home lives and school?
No. Ireland is an island, and like, if sea levels rise, like, our country will become smaller as a result.
Honestly, I don't think I've had many discussions with my friends and family about this topic because it can be quite a depressing topic. Lots of people really do like to steer away from sadder topics like our melting poles, because when people think about it, all they see is like, oh, a polar bear and he's dying on the ice. But it's important that we do try to bring it up in conversation with other people, because it's just so important to spread awareness so that everyone actually does grasp the understanding of the severity of it.
It's something that has to be talked about for something to be done about it. As well, like the melting of the ice, it reflects a lot of the heat back to the sun. But if that goes, it's just going to be the dark water, which does not do the same. And that would result in our planet becoming even warmer, which we definitely can't have happening. The rising sea levels is very relevant to Ireland. People just do not think about it. We see the severe coastal erosion that's happening, and then we're like, oh, we need to try to fix that by putting in rehabilitation measures. But we probably should look at the root cause, which is the Arctic.
Well, if we're going to look at that root cause, we should go to the source. How about a Danish marine ecologist living in Greenland?
So hello, my name is Mie Winding. I am in Nuuk in Greenland in the moment, and I'm the head of the Greenland Climate Research Center here in Greenland. So like, when you look at the ocean, you just see the surface and then there's something happening underneath. You have no clue what it is, but there's all this hidden world like a fairy tale living down there. So that's why I became a marine ecologist, going on a treasure hunt and figure out what is in this secret world. Being Danish, there's always just a few kilometers to the sea. I think that's really important, that it's something that is part of your daily life. And it's the same here in Greenland. All settlements in Greenland is connected to a fjord or to the oceans. It's part of your daily life and it's part of your surrounding environment. It's very, very important.
Two thirds of Greenland's area falls north of the Arctic Circle, an invisible boundary that marks where you can experience the midnight sun in midsummer and the Arctic winter in December in the north. It is quite far away from a currently sunny Ireland. But we asked our brain trust what they knew about the place.
I don't really know much about Greenland. Like, thought Greenland is like grassy lands.
The only thing I know that Greenland has a lot of green.
Greenland, I know that Greenland is white and white land is green, which makes no literal sense.
I know that it's not green.
They should change the name. It's white and it's called Greenland.
I think I know a few stuff in Greenland. It's in the north, like up at the north.
It's cold.
I've heard that some of the animals are there include puffins and seals. Since it's up in the north, I think there are lots of animals that would live in like harsh weathers.
The ice is melting.
And that's a bad thing.
There's less homes for like the animals that live there.
Not bad. But what's it like on the ground where Mia lives in Nuuk?
So Nuuk is the capital of Greenland. And Nuuk is a completely normal small city as in Ireland or in Denmark. We have a cinema. We have supermarkets. My kids go to dancing. They go to soccer. It's a normal life. There's internet everywhere. The only difference is that as soon as you go outside of Nuuk, my kids are used to a world without internet or mobile signal. The fjord is their playground, the mountains behind. So I think in their daily life, it's much like European countries, except that you can go ski all winter long. You can go on the snowmobiles. You go sailing. You go hunting and fishing. Many things are like a normal kid's childhood. And then you just have these things which are a little bit different. But it's a modern city.
Mia and her team at the Greenland Climate Research Centre are well placed to study the changes taking place.
So what we do is to study the effect of climate change on marine ecosystems. Marine ecosystems are very important in Greenland. They are responsible for around 92% of our economy. So all of the country's economy is closely related to the fishery and the fishery industry. But in addition to that, the ocean is also very connected in a cultural manner and in a traditional manner. It's people go hunting, people go kayaking. It's part of everyday life to be connected to the fjords.
That sounds a lot like Ireland, really. Most of us aren't far from water of one kind or another. But I'm not sure how quick we are to see the connections between the ocean, ourselves, and the weather.
You know the word weather? In Greenlandic, the word for weather is sila. But sila is something more than just the weather. When you in Greenlandic say weather, it's the connection between you and the environment as well. It's the connection between nature. It's a more holistic way of looking to weather. Weather for most European people, it's rain, it's storm, it's sun, it's warm. It's something which you could put into a box and understand. It's just a word describing something, like describing a chair. But the word sila is something more. It's the whole connection. I think that's really nicely describing how climate change is impacting things, because it's not just impacting something, it's impacting the whole thing in connection to each other. It's not everybody's opinion, but yes, I would say all these things we see now is due to human-introduced climate change.
Mia and her team are not on their own in connecting these dots. Internationally, there are thousands of scientists dedicating their lives to studying our changing climate. And one such scientist in America is Zach Leib.
My name is Zach, so I am a climate scientist, and really my research has been about trying to answer a really big question, and that's essentially disentangling what is climate change versus natural variability in weather. And so for my research, I use a lot of different computational methods, climate models, statistics, machine learning, to try to answer these questions, both in the real world and also in future projections. And one region I've spent a lot of focus on is within the Arctic. The Arctic is a region that's rapidly changing. It's the fastest, most warming location in the world. And so I've tried to utilize these types of methods to really better understand what's happening in the Arctic and communicate its impacts to others.
Those impacts, especially extreme weather, are often spoken about without reference to the climate crisis. But Zach and others like him are working hard to connect the impact to a cause.
So there is a really exciting area of research within climate science that I have worked a bit on, and it is this detection and attribution of extremes. So, you know, if you asked me this question maybe a decade ago, you know, I probably would shy away from it and say, we can't, you know, give you an answer. Climate change caused, you know, this particular storm and heat wave. But now we're actually the field of this attribution of saying, you know, what did humans contribute to an extreme? It's rapidly growing, and we now have the tools, and we've shown that the science is robust to make some of these answers. For me, I still like to come at it from, like, I'll give a heat wave example. You know, I still like to say that, you know, climate change didn't necessarily cause this heat wave on this day, but it's increasing the probability of this type of heat to occur. You know, we can expect extreme heat events like this to be more frequent than they were in the past, and with greater magnitude, greater heat, you know, that hot daily temperature. So for me, you know, I think we can also talk about this for, in terms of rainfall and flooding. You know, climate change is causing an increase in rainfall extremes. So we can say that we're going to expect more extreme flooding events like this one going forward into the future. And for me, I think this often connects to people because they can say, oh, that event was really bad. So if we're going to have more of these types of events, that's not good. So to me, that's how I typically explain them.
When you bring the impacts into focus, looking at events that are taking place elsewhere, it can still be hard to see that what we do could make a difference, good or bad.
Dana, do you see any connections between what we do here at home and the changes that we're seeing in our weather systems?
Oh, yes, I absolutely do. In a lot of our society, we're really dependent on fossil fuels. Obviously, that does have a huge effect on the rising sea levels due to the melting of the ice in the Arctic.
Our carbon emissions are still way too high, and I think we're missing the target. We are going to have to pay a lot of money again because of that, which I think we do need to have those stakes there for change to happen.
I've talked to my parents a good bit before about it, and they would say that they've noticed changes in the weather, even in their lifetimes, which isn't like even that long, but it's scary that in that length of time, stuff has changed so much. We're kind of blind, I think, as a country to the actual effects, because it's happening to other people who'd be contributing the least to these emissions that is happening to the most.
Since we live in an area where we fortunately do not really feel all the effects of climate change as the other people near the Arctic or in parts of Africa or Asia feel, I feel like we are incredibly grateful for that, but still we need to have a certain amount of empathy for them as well. And try to work with them, try to unify our relation with them, emphasizing that we are in this together, and there would be a time when every single one of us would feel effects of the climate change as each other.
And I don't think it will be until too late when we actually properly realize like what our actions have caused when something massive happens, like large sea level rises that could end up swallowing up a good chunk of our country.
Everything is connected, and we need to do more, basically. Yeah.
So, although we may distance ourselves from the cause, we can't push responsibility away. And increasing temperatures are definitely affecting the Greenland ice sheet.
Greenland is first of all the largest island. It is covered by enormous ice sheet. So the Greenland ice sheet have been there for over 100,000 years. It is very thick. So some places it's over 3 kilometers thick, the ice. And it covers around 82% of Greenland. So most of Greenland is covered by this massive, giant block of ice. If you looked at a map 50 years ago, you would see more ice than you see today. We know that the Greenland ice sheet is melting, and it's melting some areas faster and faster. You can actually see the difference if you compare the satellite maps from just a few years apart, and we can see that the glaciers are changing. And if all this ice melted, it would not be in my lifetime, and it would not be in the kids living today. Ice time far, far away in the future. If all that ice melted, the oceans globally will rise around 7.2 meters, which is quite a lot if you think about it. But it's not the same for everywhere. So in Greenland, the water level is actually decreasing. So it's going down because all this ice is very heavy. So it's pressing down on the Greenland ground. So when it melts, it actually rises. So in Greenland, we are not afraid about a rising sea water level. We are actually more concerned about the upset.
Okay, so it'll take time for that ice to disappear. But why is it being impacted so much more quickly at the poles than elsewhere?
The Arctic is warming faster than anywhere else on our planet. We often hear about the Earth's global temperature, and so the Arctic is warming almost 4 times faster than the rate of the entire globe's temperature.
It's due to the fact that if you know on a hot summer day, you go into your car and you have black leather seats, it gets really hot. You will burn yourself. If you go into a car with white leather seats, they will be not as warm. It's because the dark surface accumulates more heat. The climate change is amplified because as soon as the white snow melts, it's white, it doesn't absorb heat, it gets dark ground and it absorbs more heat.
So this warming is causing dramatic changes to the environment. It's causing a reduction in the amount of sea ice. It's causing a reduction in the amount of ice on land. So thinking about glaciers and the Greenland ice sheet, it's affecting things like permafrost. It's causing a greening of the Arctic. So what that means is we're seeing more and more vegetation actually starting to creep northward into the Arctic during the summertime. It's changing snowfall, and all of this, it's not just impacting, you know, the scientific system, but it's impacting people and the ecosystems and animals, both on land and in the ocean. And, you know, communities are being impacted by this directly in the Arctic. They're seeing major challenges that they did not experience, you know, only just a decade ago.
So that's why the Arctic is so interesting, because things are happening really fast up here because this climate change is amplified in all these different effects.
And now we're learning that this rapid warming of this one specific region of our planet also impacts elsewhere across the planet. So it's this really crucial environment. You know, I had luckily a chance to visit, but many of us will never get to visit. So it feels so off remote, you know, just this icy place. But we're realizing that this icy place is a really key part of our planet and for the climate system.
One of the white surfaces that's been reflecting the sun and protecting our planet for a long time is the Arctic sea ice.
So sea ice, it's frozen ocean water. So sea ice, the loss of sea ice actually doesn't really contribute to sea level rise like we hear about our coastlines. That's coming from things like glaciers and the Greenland ice sheet. But sea ice is still very crucial. You know, imagine the Arctic during summertime. So they get 24 hours of daylight. And, you know, the sunlight, it comes in and typically there would be sea ice covered. So it's this bright white surface. The sunlight and all that heat would come in and a lot of that would bounce back into space, reflect off of that sea ice, that white surface. But now we're losing more and more of that sea ice. So that's exposing open ocean water. And actually, you know, the ocean is actually quite a dark surface. So what it does is it absorbs more and more of that heat. And then at the end of summer, as it gets darker and much, much colder, that heat that was absorbed and stored into the ocean is then released back into the atmosphere. That contributes to more warming of the Arctic, causing more sea ice to, you know, get reduced. And so you get this, we call it a positive feedback. It's basically an acceleration of the warming of the Arctic because we're no longer having that bright white surface that reflects some of that, you know, energy back out into space. And so this refrigerator that we normally have at the top of our planet is slowly, you know, fizzling out. You know, it's causing more and more heat to accelerate, which is one of the really key parts of why sea ice is so crucial.
And that has serious impact in Greenland for the ice and also the people who depend on it.
The effects of climate change we see in Greenland, there's many different, but one of the things is that we can see that the sea ice is disappearing. So the sea ice is getting thinner and it's also there for a shorter time of period. So imagine you live in the northern part of Greenland. You are further north than the polar circles. That means in the wintertime it's dark all year round. Normally they will go hunting on their snowmobiles or their dog sledges on the ice. It's safe, the ice is steady. And an elderly once told me that he could go hunting for days without looking back. But now he can only go for a day because he doesn't trust the ice more. The ice has become unpredictable, so you don't know if it breaks up. If you can't go on your dog sled or your snowmobile, you need to take a boat. But nobody can sail in the winter times because it's dark. The ocean is full of sea ice, so it's too dangerous to take your boat. You can't go out hunting or fishing, and this is the way you're providing food for your family. So it actually means that you are not able to support your family.
That's really sad. And even if it feels remote to you, it will also have an impact on our seas.
That ice that's melting over these land areas, that fresh water is then going into the ocean, contributing to rising sea levels. And our climate models project that, as we experience more and more warming, that rate of sea level rise is going to increase. We've already seen a slight acceleration of the rate of global sea levels rising. So coastal communities should absolutely be concerned. It's not just, you know, the gradual rise that's only concern, but it's also, you know, increase in storms, this amplifier effect. Maybe you would have a storm come in decades ago and it would still cause flooding along the shoreline. But now, because the sea level is higher already, it's going to amplify that amount of flooding that would have already occurred, but make it worse. Any coastal communities need to be thinking about what is their risk factor for these types of different threats.
In Greenland, we have many fjords, and they are all connected to the Greenland ice sheets. They're kind of the interconnection between the ocean on one side and the Greenland ice sheet on the other side. They all have these different types of glaciers. We have some glaciers which ends in land, they melt, and you will have a river in front of it, and then it goes down to the ocean. And when you look at a map, you can see these, they are very turbid there because you bring a lot of sediment from land out to the fjord. The other kind of glaciers are the one ending in the ocean. Those, instead of just releasing fresh water in a river, they will crack out icebergs. That's where icebergs are coming from. But they will also put a lot of turbulence into the water and making kind of this upwelling, which means that they actually are quite productive. And we can see that all the fishery is closely connected to these fjords where we have these glaciers ending in land. But we also know that the glaciers are retracting, they are melting. And at one point, these marine terminating glaciers will be on land as well. And that means that instead of having a very high productive fjord, we will have a low productive fjord. But it's not only bad things, because climate change is also, it's depending a little bit on who you are. So if you are a species who like warm waters, the world are becoming better because the area you can thrive in is getting bigger. So if you are Atlantic species and the Arctic is getting warmer, you can suddenly actually pursue new areas. And we saw that a couple of years with the mackerels. Mackerels have never been registered in Greenland before. And suddenly one year we caught a lot of mackerels and tuna. And we did that for a couple of years. And we thought that was because of the water getting warmer. But then suddenly the water, the currents of the world, the global water currents again changed a little bit. And now we don't have mackerels. But climate change is not just a bad thing. It also gives possibilities for farming in Greenland. It gives possibility for others species. And I think one thing you can say about indigenous people all around the world, or people living in extreme environments, are that they are very ready to adapt. So when the cod fishery went down, we just changed it to shrimp fishery. When species disappear, we change and then we adapt.
Humans are definitely adaptable. But is there a problem with us seeing opportunity where others experience misfortune? We asked our Brain Trust in Step Aside Educate Together National School.
There's a lot of hidden stuff underground in Greenland, like treasures. Is it the thing that Donald Trump would like to have Greenland? Yeah, because he's trying to say that he wants to be with them, but he actually just wants the land to find all the treasures under the ground. Treasure is a lot for him, I think.
He's not a good person. For him, treasure is money and lots of gold.
Interesting. The treasure that seems to interest Trump is rare earth minerals, a military presence, and also, as Mia mentioned, secure passage over the Arctic, which could prove very lucrative. But Mia tries to stay wide of politics where she can.
So I've been here for a long time, and it's not a new concept that people are interested in Greenland. Climate change is happening 4 times faster in Greenland. That means that a lot of scientists have been interested for a long time in exploring Greenland. And then it's also, it sounds a little bit like a fascinating Greenland, right? It's far away, it's indigenous people, it's dog sleds, it's whales, it's polar bears. It's this fascinating world of the Arctic, which I think fascinated a lot of people. But now we are also a little bit more interesting because we are also placed in an important part of the world. When the sea ice melts, like the industry will say, it's a good thing that sea ice melts because that opens up new shipping possibilities. You can sail places. You can transport cargo easily around the Arctic. So a lot of things happening in the Arctic and Greenland right now, which makes the world's eyes looking at us.
One of the reasons we in Ireland look north, apart from sea level rise, is because of the potential impact the meltwater will have on the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream is a long ocean current that runs along the east coast of the US and Canada, bringing the warm water from the Gulf of Mexico to the North Atlantic Ocean. And it's one of the main reasons we have a temperate climate, which could be under threat, although the debate continues.
So this question is one of the most difficult to answer, and one thing you need to be aware of is that scientists doesn't always agree, maybe because we don't have the answer yet. But one of the things people have been looking into is these jet streams. We have kind of had two groups in the moment. One who kind of thinks that some of these jet streams will weaken, which means that the whole ocean circulation will change. Other things, it will not happen or is not happening. They're not agreeing completely on this subject either. If it happens, it will mean that the temperatures around the world will change dramatically. In Greenland, it would be much colder, while in Europe, it would be much warmer. But for me, for this one, it's a little bit like the weather forecast. You have a model describing the weather tomorrow, and they're not always right. Sometimes, if they say it will be rainy tomorrow, it will rain. But sometimes they say nothing about rain and it will still rain tomorrow. It's a model describing something. So I think for these, we are not there where we have the complete right answer yet. We know climate change is happening and we have the right answers here. And we know quite a lot of what the things are happening with sea ice and ocean temperatures. But these models, I would say we are still in an area where we don't have the right answer yet. But I think that's what fascinates a scientist. If we just had the answer, we would kind of give up. I think being a scientist is a little bit like being on a treasure hunt for the right answer. And our whole mission is to show that the other ones was wrong, right? And it goes back to earlier time. First, you thought that the Earth was flat, then somebody kind of stated it was not. But then we kind of think that this is the equation to everything. So what is the truth? There's just so many questions we don't have an answer to yet. Things we don't understand how works. This is the fascinating things. Trying to figure out, just giving a little bit, giving one piece of the puzzle. And it's a puzzle of millions of items, but just trying to figure out how things are connected and how things work. I think that's the fascinating. So I think all scientists are fascinated by finding out what actually is going on and standing on this climate change issue, which will impact the whole world and is impacting the whole world, is part of the thing which drives us.
That fascinating treasure hunt to find answers to the world's biggest scientific questions is one that's sadly under threat where Zach lives.
Unfortunately, there's been quite, as you know, a bit of pushback against science and in how science operates in the United States. In fact, just yesterday, there was a notice that one of the primary sources for measuring and observing Arctic sea ice, the data itself, is potentially losing funding support in the United States. I mean, this data is behind some of the key, you know, understanding that we have of climate change for the entire generation of climate science as a whole now being threatened. And I think it's really important to advocate for science. We're not seeing this just to climate science, but we're seeing it across all of science. And so for me, I really want to, you know, get people thinking about why is science so important, how, you know, we utilize all of this research in our everyday lives, how it improves our everyday lives. And I think that's really important. So what I would say to students is really to still advocate for how amazing science is, how we can improve our understanding of our so interesting planet, and how we can make our lives better and continue this excellent work. And I think we really need all the support we can get at this stage.
Huge thanks to Zach in New York for speaking with us. We'll hear more from him in another episode. But you can find him on Blue Sky at zachlabe.com. And of course, to Mia Winding, who was so generous with her time and in sharing both her work and the culture of Greenland. It's not an easy time to be a climate scientist right now. It's like half the world is looking to you for answers, and the others are claiming that what you've discovered is untrue, which is a tricky position to occupy. It's troubling when every fraction of a degree makes a difference. Every moment we wait is kind of crucial.
Yeah, right. So time is really important here. The longer we wait to address climate change, reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the burning of fossil fuels, the more amplified the impacts will be, the greater risk you will have for sea level rise if you wait longer and longer. So time is really important here. The longer we wait, a much more greater impact will be had for these coastal communities or for impacts from storms and heat and such. So it's really important to address the problem before it gets, you know, a greater magnitude. And then the cost will be even higher to address and try to, you know, adapt to these changes. So time is really important for the climate change problem.
But Mia, like almost all the experts we speak with, finds resilience in action.
I think this is a question I've been asked quite often, how I can stay happy when I know what is going on in the world. I think I stay hopeful because I see people working hard to solve these problems. I think we're actually doing something. We are making new discoveries and we are finding new ways to adapt. And I think we see young people are pushing for a change quite dramatically. I'm giving up on the old ones. I don't think we can change old people's behavior. They will still do whatever they want to do. But I think still that the world is full of possibilities. Every fraction we do, we make a change and a difference.
Ecolution is produced by Nikki Coughlin with production assistance from Aoife O'Neill, and it's presented by me, Evie Kenny. To hear more from our panel, head over to the RTE Kids YouTube channel.
If you enjoyed this podcast, RTE Junior has tons of podcasts for kids of all ages. Simply search for RTE Junior Radio and have a listen.